This is Bad Cop No Donut for the week of June 2nd, 2005.
All right, police! Police!
Bad Cop No Donut!
Bad, 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 bad.
Cop, 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 cop.
No, 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 no.
Donut, 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 donut.
It's under law, and I rule.
With your weekly wrap-up of North American police brutality, misconduct, and corruption, I'm Ron Anisich at CKLN in Toronto. Stay tuned after this week's headlines for an interview from Free Radio Santa Cruz, which takes a look at the excessive police response to a critical mass bike ride in Sacramento, California last Friday. But first, let's have a look at what our police did to us this week.
I joined the city council in wanting to post that picture and wanting to make sure that the community is aware of the danger that this person may pose, but I want to make sure we're on solid legal ground first.
The message sent by the district attorney's office is you can do a crime and not do the time. People write bad checks and they do time for a lesser crime than what Officer Smith's crime sentence was, and that's not fair.
A police officer in Taunton, Massachusetts, will not serve jail time and will be allowed to keep his pension, even though he admitted repeatedly molesting his adopted daughter. An Associated Press report says that a plea agreement reached last week between prosecutors and Officer David Smith will see the charges against him dropped completely after 4 years of probation. He will not have a criminal conviction on his record. Smith admitted to molesting the girl almost every night for 1 year, beginning when she was 7 years old, yet he will not have to register as a sex offender. Smith resigned from his job last July after his arrest. The victim is currently in the custody of the Department of Social Services. A police officer in Gray, Georgia, was arrested on Friday and charged with child molestation. The Macon Telegraph reports that Officer James Albert Clark was arrested after a week-long investigation by Georgia Bureau of Investigation agents. A complaint against Clark was received last Monday, and the officer was suspended immediately. Investigators say that an incident took place between Clark and a girl who was then 14 years old, while he was in uniform but off-duty in November or December 2003. An arrest warrant was issued on Friday, and Clark was released on a $5,000 bond after turning himself in the same day.
You gotta be joking. We cannot become lax, and we can't become complacent about security. It's something that we have to work hard on every day. And, you know, this certainly raises some questions when something like a gun is found as to whether or not we're actually doing that.
After what happened at the other courthouse, I'm very concerned about that.
It is an indication of some problems, attitude problems, that people must learn that when you're in a courthouse setting, that security is your primary concern. It doesn't affect somebody else, it affects you.
A sheriff's deputy in Fulton County, Georgia, was suspended for 30 days for leaving her gun in a courthouse restroom. A WXIA report says that Hattie Ritchie was suspended last Wednesday after her gun was turned into authorities minutes after she left it in the restroom. The courthouse where the gun was left was located blocks away from another courthouse, which was the site of a deadly shooting spree in March. Ritchie will be transferred to a county jail after her suspension.
I've got some sad news I'd like to deliver on behalf of the Albuquerque Police Department. Tim Chavez, a 13-year veteran of the Albuquerque Police Department, was arrested approximately 45 minutes ago. Officers soon learned that vehicle that they had stopped was an undercover vehicle being driven by an Albuquerque Police Department detective. Late yesterday evening, officers were able to get a positive identification on the DNA evidence linking the officer to the alleged rape.
A police officer in Albuquerque, New Mexico, was arrested last Tuesday for raping a 14-year-old girl. An Associated Press report says that Officer Timothy Chavez appeared in court on Thursday and was charged with criminal sexual penetration of a minor. He was released after posting a $75,000 bond. The incident was reported by the victim at the time it occurred in April, but an arrest was not made until the victim identified Chavez when he was dining in the same restaurant as the girl and her family last week. The officer made contact with the girl through a telephone dating service and went to her home and raped her on the same day. Chavez is currently on leave with pay. A trial began on Monday for a Baltimore, Maryland police officer accused of attacking an 18-year-old woman. A WJZ report says that Keith Jennings faces charges of sexual assault, kidnapping, false imprisonment, and misconduct in office. Jennings was indicted 15 months ago and has been free on bail ever since. He's accused of handcuffing a woman who he found standing on a street, forcing her into an abandoned home, and then sexually assaulting her. A former sheriff's deputy in Mesa County, Colorado, was arrested by FBI agents last Wednesday for transporting and possessing child pornography. A report in the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel says that the former deputy's home was searched back in February, and investigators have since been combing through the evidence seized, including a computer. Harry Oxford was released on bail the same day as he was arrested, and will be arraigned in federal court in Denver on charges which could see him behind bars for decades. A police officer in St. Charles, Missouri, was indicted last week on charges that he sexually abused a woman who he pulled over at a traffic stop in July 2004. According to the O'Fallon Journal, Officer Richard Fisher has been indicted by a grand jury on one charge of felony sex abuse and three counts of sexual misconduct. Fisher is accused of using physical force to compel the woman to engage in sexual activity with him after attempting to engage in conversations with her earlier in the night by driving his police cruiser up next to her vehicle when it was stopped at intersections. The incident where the assault took place was the officer's third contact with her on the night of July 25th of last year. A police officer in Battlefield, Missouri, has been charged with stealing a switchblade seized during a traffic stop. The Springfield News Reader says that Officer Trevor Bissell was charged last Thursday with one misdemeanor count of stealing. The switchblade was taken during a police search where drugs were recovered. Bissell's behavior will not affect the drug case. The search itself was later found to be illegal, and all charges against the arrested were dropped. Bissell was suspended without pay on May 17th, pending the results of the investigation. A Virginia Beach, Virginia police officer pleaded guilty last Wednesday to contributing to the delinquency of a minor. WAVY says that Officer Paul Spreader was originally charged with three counts connected to incidents which occurred between December and February while the officer was off duty. Spreader was sentenced to 1 year in jail, which was suspended provided the officer can keep out of trouble for the next 2 years. He has been ordered to resign from his job, not to have any contact with the victim of the crime or her family, not to work in law enforcement for 2 years, and to move out of his neighborhood within 30 days. A fifth Chicago police officer has been charged in connection with a drug ring where officers are accused of stealing cocaine, money, and guns from drug dealers. The Associated Press says that Officer Eric Johnson was charged this week with conspiring to distribute cocaine and marijuana and brandishing a firearm during a drug trafficking crime. In January, four other Chicago officers were charged with conspiracy to possess and distribute drugs. A former narcotics detective in Buffalo, New York, was sentenced to 8 years in prison for civil rights violations on Friday. An Associated Press report says that Officer Paul Skinner is one of two officers found guilty by a jury last December. The other officer, Sylvester Acosta, was sentenced earlier this month to 45 years in prison. Skinner was convicted of using a firearm during a civil rights crime, conspiracy, and misdemeanor civil rights violations. Prosecutors say that Skinner and other officers gave false information to obtain search warrants, planted evidence, and stole money and other items from drug dealers. A police officer in New York City was indicted on manslaughter charges last Thursday. The New York Times reports that Officer Shamik Walton shot and killed one of the tenants in a building he owned during a dispute over 1 month's rent. Walton is currently free on bond and has been suspended without pay for 30 days. He's been on desk duty since the May 8th shooting. A police officer in Rohnert Park, California, resigned this week, minutes before a scheduled meeting with investigators looking into allegations against him. The Santa Rosa Press Democrat reports that Officer Matthew Phillips resigned 15 minutes before he was to be questioned by investigators looking into allegations that the officer engaged in acts of misconduct, including videotaping minors engaged in sex acts. Police have been investigating the case since February when Phillips was placed on administrative leave. Phillips has not been arrested or charged with a crime.
Would this be accepted and Brentwood. Would this type of activity be accepted in Palos Verdes? And if it will not be accepted in Brentwood, if it cannot be accepted in Palos Verdes, if it will not be allowed in Beverly Hills, then damn it, we don't want this type of activity in the city of Compton.
How many investigators did you have at the scene? How many man hours were actually spent in this investigation? When will a copy of the shooting policy be available? At what point did the officer's feeling of fear subside? Was it after the third bullet or the 103rd bullet?
I've got several calls from some citizens to put back on the ballot whether or not they want their own police department, and we will be considering that.
If we don't want shooting in our communities, we don't want it by gang members, and we damn sure don't want it by people who are sworn to protect and serve our community.
Residents of Compton, California, were still making repairs this week when 9 sheriff's deputies appeared on television to apologize for a recent incident where a quiet neighborhood was torn apart by 120 shots fired after a police chase. The Associated Press reports that the apology was carefully worded as an expression of sympathy and not an admission of guilt. The videotaped police chase, which took place on May 9th, ended when Los Angeles County Sheriff's deputies fired 120 rounds at an unarmed man who turned out to be innocent. The man and a sheriff's deputy were both injured. Since 1999, the 8,000-member Sheriff's Department has spent almost $4 million a year on settlements and judgments in cases involving excessive use of force. A police officer in Torrance, California, was arrested in Las Vegas along with a blackjack dealer earlier this month. According to the Casino City Times, the pair, including Officer Edgar Zermeno, were charged with felony counts of cheating and conspiracy after they were caught cheating by a casino security camera. Zermeno, who is currently on paid leave, will lose his job and spend up to 12 years in jail if he is convicted on the charges. The district attorney in Vicksburg, Mississippi, is seeking the advice of the state attorney general's office in trying to determine if he can have 2 police officers accused of having sex with a 17-year-old high school student charged with sexual battery. The Associated Press says that one of the 2 unnamed officers worked at a high school where his victim was a student. That officer was suspended for 20 days for conduct unbecoming an officer earlier this month. No action has been taken against the second officer. State law in Mississippi says that a person is guilty of sexual battery when they engage in sexual contact with someone under the age of 18 and are also in a position of trust or authority over that person. The law mentions teachers, doctors, ministers, coaches, and others specifically, but it does not mention law enforcement officers. If the state law does not apply to the police, then it could be easily argued that a clear double standard exists. It's hard to imagine a scenario where it would be argued that the police have no authority over the students in the schools where they work. The charge carries a potential 30-year prison sentence. It was revealed this week that 1/3 of all applicants to become agents of the State Law Enforcement Division in South Carolina were rejected because of concerns with their employment records. An Associated Press report says that the problems ranged from policy violations and drinking on duty to mishandling evidence and money. Many of the applicants are currently employed with other law enforcement agencies in South Carolina. A police detective in St. Petersburg, Florida, was suspended for 5 days last week because of an incident where a window was broken at his ex-wife's home. The St. Petersburg Times reports that Officer Anthony Foster went to his wife's home after repeatedly calling her cell phone on March 6th. A window was broken and his wife sustained a minor cut in the incident, but she refused to press charges. Foster was suspended for violating a department policy that requires officers to behave appropriately. Foster was also suspended for 3 days in April 2004 after he slapped a fellow officer during an altercation when his wife discovered him in a parked car with another woman. A 5th sheriff's deputy in Campbell County, Tennessee, has pleaded guilty to civil rights charges connected to the beating of a man last July. According to the Knoxville News Sentinel, Deputy William Carroll was taken into custody last week to await sentencing. The five deputies are accused of beating and kicking a handcuffed man in an attempt to force him to sign a document which would have allowed them to search his home. They also admit to holding the man's head underwater in a fish tank and a toilet during the ordeal. The other deputies who have already pleaded guilty to their charges in the beating are Joshua Monday, Shane Green, Samuel Franklin, and David Weber. Weber has also been investigated for the misappropriation of $4,000 of department money earmarked for drug investigations. A sheriff's deputy in Knoxville, Tennessee, has been indicted by a grand jury for stealing items from the home of a man who was arrested for murder. An Associated Press report says that Officer Doug Trentham was present during a search of the man's home at the time of his arrest. He is accused of returning to the home when he was on patrol at a later date and taking items that had been inventoried in the search. Trentham turned himself in last Monday, the same day the indictment was handed down. A Nashville, Tennessee narcotics detective who was the subject of a misconduct investigation last year was appointed chief of police of Coopertown last Monday. A report in the Tennessean says that E.J. Bernard was investigated for filing false reports, intimidation, and discrimination in a murder investigation where he focused his attention on a suspect who was later cleared of the crime. Bernard retired from the Nashville department last October after the investigation was launched. Coopertown is a community of around 5,500, 30 miles northeast of Nashville. The chief's job pays $28,000 a year. The mayor of Coopertown says that he did not know anything about Bernard's alleged past misconduct, but does not plan to pursue the matter further. The mayor himself was convicted of felony burglary in the 70s and served a year in prison. A state trooper in Middletown, Connecticut, who led police on a drunken high-speed chase will not serve any time in jail and may not have any charges on his record. The Associated Press explains that Trooper Victor Diaz was given accelerated rehabilitation by a judge last Thursday, which is a special form of probation, after which all charges will be erased from the trooper's record. On March 6th, Diaz led officers on a chase which at times exceeded speeds of 100 miles per hour. It took three officers to handcuff Diaz after he became aggressive when the officers tried to conduct a field sobriety test. Diaz was charged with driving while impaired, reckless driving, engaging an officer in pursuit, interfering with a police officer, threatening, and carrying a dangerous weapon in a motor vehicle. A sheriff's deputy in Westmoreland County, Pennsylvania, was arrested during a prostitution sting last weekend. A report in the Pittsburgh Tribune Review says that Deputy Tommy Wincoop was not on duty or in his police cruiser when he was arrested. The deputy will be reassigned until the outcome of the charges against him is known. A state constable in Pennsylvania who was already convicted of stealing drug evidence money has now been charged with stealing money from traffic fines. An Associated Press report says that George Galovich was charged last week with theft and misappropriation of entrusted property. He is accused of stealing $1,200 in traffic fines in Allegheny County in February 2002. Galovich is also awaiting trial on charges that he stole $4,000 the same way in Butler County. He is also currently awaiting sentencing after being convicted of stealing around $350 of drug evidence money. Investigators are looking into why police in Sea Isle City, New Jersey, failed to respond to a 911 call from a local elementary school. According to WNBC, a teacher at the school called for help in dealing with the local police chief, who was in the school to discuss a problem involving his son. Police did not respond to the emergency call. The Cape May County prosecutor is investigating. Police in West Long Branch, New Jersey, arrested an FBI agent for shoplifting last Friday. According to the Asbury Park Press, Agent Thomas Jobs was arrested by local police after a hardware store security guard observed him stealing 36 cents worth of electrical wire. The murder trial of a Royal Canadian Mounted Police officer in Tuktoyaktuk, Northwest Territories, ended with a hung jury last Friday. The CBC reports that Officer Jim Elias allegedly shot his brother twice in the abdomen at a drinking party in February 2003. The jury was also unable to decide whether or not the officer wounded another man who was also shot at the party. The trial was held in Inuvik because the court could not find an impartial jury in the officer's hometown. The judge in the case has ordered that any potential future trial be held in Yellowknife. Prosecutors will decide in the next few weeks whether or not to take the officer to trial again. A provincial police officer in Manitouwadj, Ontario, has pleaded guilty to an internal charge of discreditable conduct. According to the Thunder Bay Chronicle-Journal, Sergeant Nicholas Clitour was discovered to be in possession of pornographic stories, which were found on a computer disk in his desk. The officer was given a reprimand and will be transferred in August to the Ontario Provincial Police Detachment at Queen's Park, the provincial legislature in Toronto.
They were just everywhere. I mean, everywhere. I remember them saying something about us being at the wrong place at the wrong time. You probably wouldn't get the same kind of treatment I get when you get stopped, if you get stopped.
Why am I checking this young black guy? Am I checking him for this reason, and this reason? Or is the driving sole basic reason because of his age and color of skin?
I don't really think any longer we have to get into the debate of whether it happens or it doesn't happen. We have to get in the debate of what do we do?
The results of the first racial profiling study by a police department in Canada were released this week. The CBC reports that for 1 year, police in Kingston, Ontario, a mostly white community, kept statistics about the race of those they pulled over and the reasons for pulling them over. A report released this week found that police in the community were four times as likely to pull over blacks than whites. Police were found to have stopped First Nations people 1.5 times more often than whites. Although race-based statistics are routinely collected by police departments in the United States, in Canada, police departments are strongly opposed to the practice. What do you call a gang of armed men who steal bicycles from homeless people? Here in Toronto, we call them the police. This week, police in Toronto seized a bicycle from a homeless person because they didn't believe it belonged to him, despite the fact that he possessed a receipt from when he purchased it. A report in the Toronto Sun says that it took the efforts of a concerned citizen who went through the trouble of obtaining a security video from the store where the man purchased the bike and taking it to police as proof of the man's ownership of the bike to get any results. Police then returned the man's property, partially. Police have yet to give back the man's lock.
It helps a lot to know that people are joining in on the effort to see to it that justice is brought about.
When it gets in the hands of humans and people who have emotions and people who get angry and people who don't follow the rules, it can be a very dangerous weapon.
An 18-year-old who was on his way home from a graduation party in Springfield, Ohio, was killed by a police officer who shocked him with a taser after she observed him behaving strangely in a field. Officer Christine Albrecht shocked the man just after midnight on Saturday after he refused her command to stop. He was later pronounced dead at a hospital. On Tuesday, protesters gathered outside of a police station in nearby Akron, where they called for an end to taser use by police. Police there killed a man using a taser in January. That death was ruled a homicide, and the taser was determined to be a contributing factor. A man in Nashville, Tennessee, died on Friday after being shocked by a police taser. Police say that a preliminary autopsy showed the man choked to death on a small bag of crack cocaine, which lodged in his throat. A protest was held in Lawrenceville, Georgia, on Friday to mark the one-year anniversary of the death of a man who was shocked 5 times by police with a taser. That man was at a local jail with his hands and ankles restrained and was being held down by 6 officers when he was repeatedly shocked. He lost consciousness 4 minutes later and died 2 days later in hospital. A county prosecutor is considering a special grand jury in that case. 4 Charlotte, North Carolina students have been shocked with tasers. In one incident, a 16-year-old was involved in a schoolyard fight when he received a 50,000-volt shock. Police there say that tasers give them more confidence to do their job in the schools. The police in Charlotte do not track the use of tasers in schools or elsewhere. A sheriff's deputy in West Palm Beach, Florida, shocked a 16-year-old boy with a taser after the boy's father attempted suicide by slashing his wrists. The boy had called 911 for an ambulance, but deputies arrived on the scene first and handcuffed the boy's father. The teen said he then called 911 again and asked for cops who could do their job. Police say the boy threatened them with a lit cigarette. Police in Louisville, Kentucky, accidentally used a taser on a police officer who was a diabetic suffering from low blood sugar on Monday night. The officer, who was shocked, had been driving erratically when he was stopped by police who claimed they shocked him with a taser when he resisted them. The sheriff in Jacksonville, Florida, says his deputies will use tasers again, but not until new guidelines are created for their use. The use of tasers was suspended in February. One of his deputies was suspended for 3 days last week for shocking a 13-year-old girl who was handcuffed in the backseat of his squad car. 1,800 tasers were purchased by the Jacksonville Sheriff's Department at a cost of $2 million, about a month before their use was discontinued. Taser use by police in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, has increased substantially over the past year. Police there used tasers on 42 people in the first 3 months of this year, compared with 6 people during the same period last year. About 190 Pittsburgh police officers carry tasers. In Pennsylvania, tasers are in use by more than 150 law enforcement agencies. The police department in Hayward, California, is seeking permission and funding from city council to purchase 80 tasers for their officers. They hope to have the weapons deployed sometime this summer. A proposal to ban sales of tasers to civilians that was proposed in California was rejected by legislators there this week. Taser International claims it sells around 1,000 tasers to civilians in California each year. In addition to the killings already reported on this week's program, police also killed people this week in Tacoma, Washington, Altus, Oklahoma, San Jose, California, Los Angeles, California, Phoenix, Arizona, Brownwood, Texas, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Millersville, Maryland, Gates, New York, and Granite City, Illinois. Critical Mass are a loose collective of bicycle activists that gather for monthly rides in over 200 cities and towns across North America. In Sacramento, California, the most recent Critical Mass ride was met with police oppression and arrests. This was not the first time that the Critical Mass ride had been the victim of heavy-handedness from Sacramento police. In 2001, a dozen people were issued citations, and one person was arrested at the September Critical Mass ride. In fact, Critical Mass rides have been the focus of unwanted attention from law enforcement throughout the United States and Canada. At the Sacramento ride last Friday, 4 people were arrested, including Peter, who was featured in this interview from Free Radio Santa Cruz, recorded on Tuesday.
Okay, well, basically, we started out with, well, it was a great ride, a decent number. You know, not a great number, but it was a pretty decent number.
Where does this start from in Sacramento?
We started at Cesar Chavez Park.
Okay.
And it was going great. Like, I'd say, like, maybe even closer to an hour. Definitely about 40 minutes. Just a nice ride. You know, there was some aggressive drivers here and there, but for the most part, you know, we all stayed together and let all the drivers know, you know, we're having a ride today.
How many folks were riding?
I'd say close to 40. It was a good, like, high energy bunch, you know, like everybody was like sticking together and everybody was just really into the ride, you know. So it was a really good group. So we started riding close to 6.
6 o'clock, okay.
So the first cop arrived, let's say closer to 7. This one cop pulls up to this one intersection that we're crossing. He's at the red light and we're basically crossing his path. He yells out that he's been getting calls of people throwing bicycles at cars, which was never happening at all. At the most, we were asking cars in a very vocal manner to slow down. There was actually young people in the Critical Mass this month, so we were asking them, please slow down. There's kids in this bike ride, you know, and any of us adults, you know, we don't want to get hit either, you know, slow down, you know. There was absolutely no bicycles being thrown at cars. And so he's basically like, you know, you guys need to calm down. I'm going to start making arrests and I don't want to do that. And
this is like, one officer?
This was just one officer. In uniform.
Okay.
In his car yelling out of his window. So a few people say, hey, none of that's going on. So that's basically all that was said. We keep on riding. the car starts almost like basically escorting us, you know, pulls behind us and is following us for, I don't know, maybe almost 15 minutes. At some point, the car, out of a bullhorn, you could barely hear him just with all the noise and everything. What he was saying, like, you know, you got, guys, stay in the right lane. Oh, yeah, just this one officer. There's one officer in one car is following us, and once in a while he makes this request of keep it in the right lane.
Does anybody know who the officer is? Did he have stripes on his? Was he a sergeant or anything like that?
He was absolutely a rookie. I'm not exactly sure his ranking, but you could tell because he was the one who made the first arrest. And so it was just so obvious. Well, one, just because of how young he looked. Two, I mean, he looked about my age, you know, maybe even a little younger. I don't know.
How old are you?
I'm 25.
Okay. Did you see the first arrest? The first, you know,
yeah,
I guess, incident.
I was right
with him?
There. I was right next to the guy.
And what exactly happened with the first arrest?
Basically, what happened, and this was such a catalyst. So we're all stopped at this red light, you know, right at 15th and J, and. And so the cop comes out of his car, grabs the guy, subdues him for a few minutes, and just holds him there for like a few minutes. Wasn't even talking to him. Like, I was standing right there, you know, asking him what he's doing. Like, is he being detained? Is he being arrested? You know, what's the situation? You know, and there was others like totally standing up for the guy. You know, and just questioning the cop. The cop wasn't saying anything at all, just asking us to get back and
it's
get away from the car.
Still the one officer?
It was just one officer at this point. You know,
okay.
Pretty quickly officers started coming, but for a good, like, let's say even 5 minutes, there was just this one cop, the same cop that was following us, the same cop who made that request or who made that protest in the very beginning. And we're like, what's he being charged with? You know, then he's like, yeah, he's not being charged. I just want to ask him some questions. And then he kept changing his story. And he's like, yes, he is being charged. He's being arrested. What's he being charged with? I don't know yet. You know, he might just be detained. He just keeps changing his story back and forth.
He's just relaxing in the back of the car there with
totally.
Handcuffs
yeah.
on. Yeah,
yeah. He's just there. The cop car, I mean, the light's changing green, red, you know, while the cop car is still right there, just
blocking traffic,
blocking traffic, doing a better job of blocking traffic than he said that we were.
So what caused the second arrest, or why did they go out and grab the second person? And then...
what happened was okay. So there was a lot of this back and forth stuff of like people asking what's going on with this first arrest, And then a lot of other cops started coming. Like, remember, there's these two bike cops started coming, and then once all these other cops started coming, they started getting out their batons. They were getting out taser guns. They never actually used the taser guns, but they were getting them out as like a threat. It seemed like they were getting out pepper spray and never actually used the pepper spray. So they were getting all these like
wait they did use pepper spray
no, they never actually used the pepper spray.
Okay.
But they were getting out. But what I'm basically trying to say is they were getting all these like threatening weapons,
ready
like
trying to go.
Trying to pose some type of threat to get everybody off of the street. And pretty quickly after the first arrest and after, well, I guess I should say pretty quickly after cops started coming, the second person was technically I shouldn't say arrested. Because there's only two of us arrested. The other two were actually just detained and then later cited. So the next guy that was actually grabbed by the police, was the first, I think, of four that was really handled. I mean, the first guy, he was grabbed and then just pulled over the car. So there wasn't any real brutality there, but this second guy, I was right in that area. The guy, you know, totally grabs his arm, twists it around, and pulls it around and so from what I saw, he was the first guy who was really, you know, brutally handled, you know.
He's paying compliance maybe on him or
I would say so. That's what it seemed like to me, you know. I mean, or just some random brutality, you know. I mean, in attempts to just grab him and get him where the cop wants him to be, you know.
Did they say anything to him right before they arrested him? Like,
they didn't.
You're under arrest for.
Did they say anything to any of us?
Right. They just grabbed you.
They grabbed all four of us, and
at once.
No, I mean it was all pretty spread out. You know what I mean? Within
15 minutes or 10?
Okay. Yeah, I mean at once. It wasn't like. I didn't know what you meant. I thought you meant like completely right at once. But yeah, it was all right here at this J15th.
Okay.
I mean, it wasn't like it happened all throughout the critical mass.
Right.
It all happened right at this J15th.
Like, yeah.
There was nobody getting on the bullhorn saying, you know, okay, this is what's going to happen. I need you all to clear out of the street or else I'm going to start making arrests. Or this is what's going to happen. I need you all to continue the ride or be on the bike lane or be in one lane or else I'm going to start making arrests or anything like that. It was just this chaotic scene of this first person being arrested and this rookie cop being this catalyst to, like, oh, it was almost as like he inspired, like, these all these other cops who came later on to just start, like, grabbing
like a virus.
to be violent, basically, for no reason whatsoever. As if there's ever a justified reason for a cop to be violent.
Well, it was like what I said was it's like a virus. It just starts taking off, and I noticed that. Like they're like a bunch of dominoes that just fall one way. They all just start jumping in and grabbing people.
Exactly. That's a great way of putting it. That's a great analogy for what happened at J15.
Well, tell me, were any of the people involved, like some of the organizers that have been, you know, that are vocal opponents in critical mass, like yourself and maybe other folks? I mean, do you think maybe they grabbed these people for certain reasons?
I don't think so, because I don't think it's been such a familiar situation for them to pinpoint certain individuals. I mean that's a possibility, because, you know, but
are some of them organizers, like with Critical Mass and doing other stuff, you know, bike advocacy and other things?
Yeah, I mean, all of us there, you know, are people who are doing, like, who you can see at Food Not Bombs, you can see here and you can see there, you know, but I mean, you know, I don't think it was anything like that at all. I mean, because it was. Just from the people that were arrested, just from looking at the four of us, you know, I mean, I don't think there was any kind of, like, you know, grab the usual suspects or something like that, you know. I think it was really, like you said, it was really just this virus, you know, and it was like, you know, these cops just, like, acting upon that virus and just grabbing, you know, and just singling a few people out. Totally, you know what I mean?
So folks were charged with misdemeanor. Do you know what the charges are? Are they resisting arrest?
Okay, the second two detainees were charged with an infraction.
Okay.
Basically a traffic violation of blocking traffic.
Oh, that's it.
Okay. I'm sorry?
That's it?
That's it.
Okay.
The first guy was charged with a misdemeanor resisting arrest. Willfully resisting arrest, which I always find to be such a ridiculous charge, because it's like, what was the initial complaint? What was the initial situation for him to be resisting arrest in the first place, if he was ever resisting arrest, at all? Because, you know, I mean, from what I don't want to go any further, but I mean, that always just seems like a completely ridiculous charge to me, and I'm sure that can be dropped.
And you yourself, you got a felony,
right?
Do you want to talk about that? You don't have to if you don't want to.
Yeah, I guess I could just give everyone like a brief overview of that. I don't want to go
quickly because I'm going to have to go soon. I got another interview coming up, but yeah.
Yeah, just, no problem. Yeah, I'll try to speed that up. You know, but yeah, I don't want to get into any particulars because I mean, But yeah, so after the second two, then I'm completely off the sidewalk by then. I will admit that when the first person was arrested, I did actually go up to the cop and, like, ask him, you know, what's going on with this guy. So I was in the street at this point, but, you know, but my energy level went down. I'm on the sidewalk, totally, like, just rapping with somebody, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, this cop comes up to me. and just grabs my wrist. Doesn't say one word. Doesn't say, you know, you were blocking traffic. If you just stand there, I'm gonna cite you. Or if you just let me take you in, I'm gonna cite you for blocking traffic or something. Grabs my wrist and started twisting it around, started manipulating it in many different ways. And I'm asking him, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? And he said, submit or I'm gonna drop you. And I'm like looking at him like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? And then so he puts his leg out and tried to drop me, and like I step over it. And basically, make a long story short, he's like doing all of this stuff that just makes no sense to me, and pushes me into these bushes. And then like three other cops come. Some people told me at one point there was up to five cops on me, but either way, like they were totally just like pulling me through these bushes and these wood chips, like in this little like landscaped area. And you know, and just dragging me right through there, dragging me through the sidewalk, pushing me into the cop car. Another cop gets from the other side, pulls me through. I hit my head on the other side of the car, right on the other side of the door. So I was just totally just beat up by these cops and they never once said, you know, you were blocking traffic, you were doing this, you were doing that, anything at all, you know, never once, just totally just beat up, thrown in the car, and that was that. And then when they're saying when I got in the car that I broke one of the windows. That's what they're saying. So
right.
So the felony vandalism is because of the broken cop car window. I also have a misdemeanor willfully resisting arrest from God knows what. You know, I mean, what was I resisting? The first one comes up to me, starts manipulating my wrist. Three others start jumping on me and throwing like knees into my back and knees into my legs, you know, and they all drag me through this dirt. Like when I got to the station, I was just totally like coughing to no end, like because of all this dirt that was down my throat.
So they wanted you for he didn't even say anything. He just grabbed your ass and fucking dragged you through the ground.
He never said one thing. None of them said anything. Later on, like through the whole thing, not they didn't come back to the car. Like later on, like I mean, I was sitting there for a while they were still like pushing people back and getting people out of the street.
Right.
And never once. At one point, one cop. A higher-ranking officer, I'm not exactly sure. I don't think it was a sergeant, but I could tell it was a higher-ranking officer, comes up to me and says, hey, are you all right? And then so I thought for a second. I was like, you know what? I don't even want to say anything to any of these guys, you know? But then I was like, you know what? Hey, because I totally recognized him from the very beginning when more cops started coming. I was like, hey.
Was he in uniform?
What?
He was in uniform?
Oh, yeah, he was in uniform.
Okay.
I was like, hey, did you ask me if I was all right when I was getting beat up over there? And I was like, why don't you answer that question? And you know, and he was like, okay, you seem all right. I'm like, okay. But that was the only I swear on my life, that was the only thing that was ever said to me, and throughout the whole thing.
Right.
You know, I then at the station, after the whole booking process and after being in the holding cell for 6 to 8 hours, I get my charges, and then it says. Felony vandalism and resisting arrest, but
they let you go on your own recognizance.
No, my bail was set at $5,000, and a buddy of mine got a bail bondsman to do it on to do the 10%. So I got out on $500 then.
When's your court date?
Next Monday, the 6th. And the other guy who was arrested with me, who I was in the holding cell with the whole time, who got one of my charges, the willfully resisting arrest. His date is the 20th of June. So I'm sure both of our willfully resisting arrest charges. That's what I asked. I asked that both of those charges get dropped. I'm not sure what's going to happen with the felony vandalism. I mean, I don't know. We'll see what happens with
it. I've been there in the past. Yeah, I kicked the door to a police car open. Well, that's what I did.
Yeah.
And I got charged with it, and I end up having to pay, I think, I don't know, couple hundred bucks or something later on. It just I don't think the DA would go for this. I mean, it's up to the DA now. It's up to them to decide if they want to go for these charges. And it sounds like the reason why they arrest you? Why did they grab you? I mean, was it they didn't give you any vehicle code that you violated to begin with? Right, like you, whatever, you know.
Right, it's just totally
resisting arrest. Which what are you being arrested for?
Exactly.
And there's no reason there that you're being arrested. So, but it's fucked up. Is that you know you're being brutalized in this way? You know,
right.
Of course they're probably going to drop the charges unless they want to try to prove a point. You know, I don't know.
But right. I mean, I don't know what they're trying to prove.
That's why they tacked on the felonies, because they took your ass down and fucked you around and all that and. And they're trying to cover their own ass, I think.
Right, exactly. I mean, yeah, they can't just beat you up and then give you some traffic violation, like you know, I mean that just wouldn't look good for them, you know. They gotta up it a little bit.
Yeah, they definitely have to put resisting on there. I mean, that's what they did to Food Not Bombs for years and years and years. You know, they'd get you for resisting arrest immediately, for serving soup, you know. And I don't know. Anyway, we're talking to Peter here from Sacramento Critical Mass. He was arrested, charged with felony, as well as three other folks for misdemeanors in the May 27, 2005 ride in Sacramento, California. And I really thank you for taking this time to talk with me here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And I hope the best. I hope everything works out. Your court date is on June 6th. In where in Sacramento? So folks might want to come out there and support.
If you could take a minute, I'll get my paperwork. I'm not exactly.
It's like,
it over on.
Was it downtown Sacramento?
Downtown Sacramento. You know what? It's somewhere on I Street. Something like 8th and I. I got to figure out for myself.
Folks can email sacmass@hotmail.com for more information.
That'd be great.
Yeah, and then the other court date is June 20th.
And if anybody's listening is in like the remote area, we want to make next month as big as possible. You know, we want to have a really big turnout. So we know some people from the Bay are interested, some people from Modesto are interested. So if anyone is in the remote area can make it up to Sacramento, that'd be great to show the cops and just show the city that, you know, we want to ride.
Where do you meet?
Fremont Park. Over on like, where is it? It's like, I think it's like 15th and D, something like that.
Okay.
I don't know. Again, if you
downtown,
if you email,
sacmass@hotmail.com.
Yeah.
You
can definitely get more details. I can't think of the exact cross street off the top of my head for Fremont Park, but it's not gonna be Cesar Chavez Park anymore. We're going to meet at Fremont Park from now on.
Okay. We'll get someone.
But thank you very much. I really appreciate
the
time to expose what happened last Friday and to have a voice of this situation.
Thanks to Skidmark Bob at Free Radio Santa Cruz for letting us use that interview. Bad Cop No Donut can be heard on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101 FM every Thursday afternoon at 1 p.m. That's all for this week's show. Tune into this station next week for more. Thanks to everyone who sent in articles for this week's show and drew our attention to stories we'll be telling you about in upcoming shows. If there is anything you would like us to know about, feel free to write. The email address for this program is ron@ckln.fm. From CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto, I'm Ron Anisich.